Welcome to the Digital Gold Rush podcast. Before we begin, please remember, this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute investment, financial, trading, legal, or securities advice. Today's discussion covers Stellar, Bitcoin, gold, stablecoins, real-world asset, RWA, tokenization, DeFi, market correlations, and related policy regulatory themes. These areas involve significant risks and uncertainties. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and market and regulatory conditions can change rapidly. Do your own research, consult qualified professionals as needed, comply with all applicable laws in your jurisdiction, and you are solely responsible for your financial decisions. Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're tearing through quite a stack of research today and really trying to answer one central question. Is the huge, like, $100 trillion world of traditional assets actually about to be migrated onto blockchains?
Yeah, it's a massive question. Our sources cover a lot of ground crypto, stocks, gold, DeFi, and these real-world assets, or RWA.
And how they all intersect. That's the key.
Right. And our mission today, well, it's pretty straightforward. Pull out the core insights on how traditional finance TradFi is starting to collide, maybe even merge, with this digital finance world.
Specifically, we're going to look at, one, is Bitcoin really the new digital gold? We'll need to dig into the market correlations for that.
Two, how do different stablecoins stack up? You know, the gold-backed ones versus the regular fiat-backed ones, and what that backing actually means for you.
And third, can a platform like Stellar really act as that necessary compliance bridge between the old financial system and the new one?
Lots to cover.
Okay, let's unpack this. First up, market data. We've got sources analyzing this correlation game, Bitcoin, stocks, gold. What's the story here? Why does Bitcoin sometimes act like a tech stock and other times just do its own thing?
Well, the sources paint a pretty clear picture, kind of divided into two phases. Before 2020, things looked quite different.
How so?
Bitcoin often seemed like a potential safe haven back then. The correlation with big indices like the S&P 500, it was pretty weak, sometimes non-existent.
So it offered real diversification.
It seemed to, yeah. Organizations like the IMF even noted that Bitcoin was kind of living its own life, giving investors that genuine diversification potential.
But then, well, 2020 happened, the pandemic. Everything changed, right?
Exactly. From 2020 through 2022, you had this flood of market liquidity, interest rates near zero. And that correlation just spiked sharply. Cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin leading the charge, they basically shifted into being seen as part of this broader category of high-risk assets. They started moving much more in sync with tech stocks.
So they weren't separate anymore.
Not in the same way. Studies confirmed it. Price movements, volatility, it all started spreading much more easily between crypto and tech stocks during that period.
That is a huge shift. Does the material explain why Bitcoin didn't act like that uncorrelated asset when rates spiked in 2022, when maybe people expected it to?
Yeah, it seems to come down to what the sources are calling regime dependence. Basically, the correlation has eased off a bit from those peaks, but it's very much dependent on the market situation. Meaning the connection gets way stronger during big economic news or times of market instability. Like, the approval of the Bitcoin ETFs definitely reinforced that link, especially to the tech-heavy NASDAQ and the S&P 500.
Okay, so based on this, the diversification benefit people hoped for from Bitcoin, it vanishes, right, when you'd want it most, like in a crisis or a risk-off situation.
That really seems to be the crucial takeaway from the sources. In crises, when everyone's trying to avoid risk, think the COVID market shock or those 2022 rate hikes, the correlation actually grew stronger. It just reinforces this view that, in the short term at least, Bitcoin behaves much more like a high-risk tech investment.
Okay. And how does that compare to gold, you know, the traditional safe haven benchmark?
Gold's different. It maintains this historically low correlation with stocks. I mean, sure, you might see some short-term correlation pop up occasionally, but according to this material, gold's safe haven characteristics are clearly stronger than Bitcoin's.
So the link isn't as tight?
Generally, no. The connection between Bitcoin and stocks seems tighter than Bitcoin and gold. Bitcoin acts more like a risk-on, risk-seeking asset in the short term. It's not that seasoned counter-asset that gold is.
Understood. That clarifies the correlation picture quite a bit. Now let's shift gears to stablecoins. We really need to get clear on the difference between the fiat-pegged ones like USDC, ERC, and the gold-pegged tokens like PEX Gold or Tether Gold.
Okay, so the fiat-based ones, their goal is pretty simple. Keep a one-to-one peg with their fiat currency, like the US dollar or the euro.
And how do they do that?
They're typically backed by traditional assets, often very secure things like U.S. government T-bills. They're really designed for high liquidity for payments, trading.
Right, and the gold-backed ones.
Those track the price of actual physical gold. Usually one token equals 1 ounce of gold, and that gold is supposedly stored in highly regulated, secure vaults.
Okay, transparency and trust seem absolutely vital here. How do people actually know the collateral exists for either type? Can you verify it?
Yeah, that's key. On the fiat side, the reliable issuers think Circle with USDC and EURC, they publish regular audited reports, often certified by big firms like Deloitte, showing what's backing the tokens.
Mm.
We should probably note, though, the sources point out that Tether's USDT uses reports from BDO, but apparently lacks that full traditional audit that USDC has. So there are differences.
Good point. And for gold, how transparent is that?
On the gold side, it can get quite detailed. Paxos, the issuer of Pax Gold, is regulated by the NYDFS, that's the New York Department of Financial Services. The gold itself is stored in LBMA-approved vaults.
Okay.
And they even provide tools, apparently, that let users check the specific serial numbers of the gold bars linked to their tokens. That's pretty transparent.
It is. But if the whole point of a stablecoin is stability, why use a gold-backed one that fluctuates with gold prices instead of just buying a regular gold ETF? What's the digital advantage the blockchain gives you here?
That's a great question. The digital advantage really comes down to a few things: access, fractionalization, and programmability.
Explain that.
Well, gold tokens give you digital exposure to gold, potentially protecting against fiat inflation, but you don't need a traditional brokerage account. Plus, you can buy just a small piece fractional ownership of a gold bar, which is harder traditionally.
Right, breaking it down.
And we also have to consider the regulatory side. The EU's new MiCA regulation actually treats these differently. Fiat-based ones are called electronic money instruments. They fall under strict reserve rules, kind of like banks. But the gold tokens, they're called asset reference tokens. They have different rules about investor protection, how they're handled legally.
Okay, so USDC is like a digital dollar, ready for fast trading. And PEX gold is more like owning a fraction of a digital gold bar, but its dollar value will go up and down every day with the gold price. That distinction is really key.
Precisely. Different tools for different jobs.
Right. Now, let's zoom out a bit to decentralized finance DeFi. If we want to understand how something like Stellar fits in as a bridge, we first need to grasp what DeFi is actually doing that traditional finance isn't.
Okay, DeFi. At its core, it takes all those financial services we know, lending, borrowing, trading, saving, insurance, and runs them using blockchain technology. It aims to bypass the traditional middlemen, the banks and brokers.
And the engine behind this is the smart contract, right? The self-executing code.
Exactly. It all hinges on blockchains and these smart contracts. They allow processes like settling a loan or a trade to happen almost instantly, or atomically, as they say, without needing to trust a counterparty in the same way. That's a fundamental shift from TradFi.
And what are the big advantages people talk about?
Well, there are several. Transparency is a big one. The logic, the transactions, it's all generally verifiable on a public ledger. Accessibility is another. Anyone with internet can potentially participate globally. No geographical limits, fewer traditional credit checks. That's huge for developing nations.
Plus the famous money Legos. Everyone mentions those.
Huh, yes, composability. The idea is that these DeFi services are like building blocks, Lego bricks. You can stack them, combine them, build new innovative financial products on top of existing ones.
Interesting.
And critically, efficiency, speed. Transactions can settle in seconds, not days. And that's not just convenience. The sources emphasize that getting rid of that multi-day settlement lag frees up huge amounts of tied-up capital. That's why institutions are getting very interested.
So what are the main Lego bricks, the main components we see mentioned in the sources?
You've got decentralized exchanges, or DEXs, like Uniswap. They often use something called automated market makers, AMMs, to let users trade directly with each other, or rather, with pools of assets.
Okay.
Then you have lending protocols, AAVE and Compound are big names there.
Yeah.
And you also have DAOs, decentralized autonomous organizations, like MakerDAO, which handle governance for protocols.
It sounds like a financial playground almost, but there have to be risks, right? What does the material highlight as the downsides?
Oh, absolutely. Significant risks.
Yeah.
Smart contract vulnerabilities are probably the most immediate danger. Bugs or flaws in the code can be exploited by hackers. We've seen millions lost that way.
Yeah, those stories hit the headlines.
Definitely. Then there's regulatory uncertainty. How do you apply rules like AML, you know, anti-money laundering, or KYC, know your customer, in a system that's designed to be decentralized? That's still being figured out.
Makes sense.
Scalability can also be an issue. Popular blockchains like Ethereum can get congested, which leads to really high transaction fees, sometimes called gas fees.
And isn't there still some centralization risk, even in DeFi?
That's a very good point, yes. There's often reliance on specific service providers. Things like oracles, Chainlink is a major one, that feed real-world data into the smart contracts.
Mm.
Or dependence on the big stablecoin issuers like USDC or USDT.
Right.
Plus, liquidity can be fragmented across all these different blockchains and protocols, making things less efficient sometimes.
Okay, so DeFi offers innovation but comes with real risks. That brings us nicely to the convergence point. Real-world assets, RWA. This feels like where TradFi is really trying to harness DeFi's potential efficiency. What does RWA tokenization actually mean in practice?
RWA tokenization is basically about bringing traditional assets, think things like bonds, real estate, commodities, maybe even stakes in private companies, onto the blockchain, representing them as digital tokens.
And why do that? What's the benefit of tokenizing, say, an office building or a treasury bond?
Well, the main promised benefits are, first, potentially increasing liquidity for assets that are traditionally hard to sell quickly, like real estate or private equity.
Makes sense. Easier to trade a token.
Second, fractional ownership.
Mm.
It allows people to invest smaller amounts in high-value assets. You could own, 0.01% of a building represented by a token.
Lowering the barrier to entry.
Exactly. And third, programmability. You can embed rules directly into the token's code. Imagine automating dividend payouts or rent collection. The token handles it.
Okay, so what specific assets are actually being tokenized now? Are there concrete examples in the sources?
Yes, definitely. Government bonds seem quite popular, especially tokenized U.S. Treasury bills. The sources mention examples like Ondo Finance's OUSG token and Franklin Templeton's Benji token.
Franklin Templeton, the big asset manager.
The very same.
Yeah.
We're also seeing real estate tokenization projects like Realty and even things like carbon credits being tokenized. And of course, those gold tokens we discussed earlier fit here too.
This sounds technically impressive. Programmable bonds, fractional real estate. But these are serious Wall Street level assets. How on earth do you make sure that holding the token actually means you legally own a piece of that bond or building? That seems like a huge hurdle.
You've hit on what the sources call the Achilles heel of RWA. The token itself is just code. It's like a digital IOU. If you don't have a legally sound, robust structure connecting that token to the actual underlying asset,
what's worthless?
Pretty much, just code on a ledger. You absolutely need a strong, legally enforceable structure. Often it's a special purpose vehicle, SPV, or a trust that formally binds the digital token to the physical asset and all the rights that come with it.
So it replaces the traditional paperwork.
It aims to, yes, but it has to be legally sound. Regulation is obviously crucial here, and you often need compliance layers built in to ensure only properly identified KYC users can trade these tokens, especially if they represent securities.
Understood. So RWA tries to make traditional assets digital and programmable, but it absolutely hinges on getting that complex legal bridge right. The sources make a very strong case for that. Okay, so which blockchain network is actually positioning itself to handle this kind of volume, especially with highly regulated tokenized assets?
This is where Stellar really enters the picture in our sources. Stellar was apparently built right from the beginning with a focus on low-cost, high-speed payments and issuing tokens.
How fast are we talking?
We're talking confirmations in like 3 to 5 seconds and transaction costs that are fractions of a cent, pennies or less.
Okay, that's efficient. And they rely heavily on this anchor system, right?
Yes, exactly. These are regulated entities, banks, licensed money transmitters, payment providers like Circle who act as anchors. They issue stable coins backed 1.1 by fiat, like USDC and ERC on Stellar. And they serve as that compliant on-ramp and off-ramp between traditional money and the blockchain.
But just being a fast payment network isn't enough for the complex world of DeFi and RWA, is it? How do they handle smart contracts?
Right. That was a limitation historically, but Stellar made a huge leap recently with the launch of its new smart contract platform, Sorabon.
Sorabon.
And Sorabon is built using the Rusty programming language. The sources are pretty clear that this is a big deal. Rusty has memory safety features that help prevent many of the common bugs and vulnerabilities that have plagued older smart contract platforms written in languages like Solidity.
So it's designed for security.
It seems designed with institutional trust and security in mind, yes. That choice of Rusty is significant.
All right, so we have a fast, potentially more secure smart contract ready chain. But is it compliance friendly enough for this RWA world we're talking about, for the banks and asset managers?
The sources indicate that's a major focus for Stellar. It integrates specific tools and standards designed for compliance. For example, something called the SIP-12 protocol helps handle regulatory data, like AML KYC information, in a secure, standardized way.
And that appeals to the TradFi players.
Apparently, yes. It makes it potentially much easier for traditional regulated financial institutions to interact with the network while meeting their compliance obligations.
And is there real-world adoption that backs this up? Are people actually using Stellar for these things?
It seems so. The sources point to USDC and ERC stablecoins being widely used on Stellar. That Franklin Templeton Benji token, the tokenized treasury fund, operates on Stellar.
Okay.
And MoneyGram also uses Stellar to help power faster, cheaper cross-border payments. So the potential here, which the sources highlight, is the ability to combine these regulated RWA tokens, like Benji, which offer real-world yield, with the new DeFi capabilities enabled by Soropen. You could potentially build stable, structured financial products directly on the blockchain, powered by traditional yield.
TradFi yield meets DeFi efficiency. That really does sound like the bridge concept. But what are the big challenges? What obstacles does Stellar face, especially competing against giants like Ethereum?
Well, the main challenge mentioned is liquidity depth. Stellar's DeFi ecosystem, particularly with Soroban being new, is still growing. It needs more users, more capital flowing through it to really compete with the sheer volume locked up on larger platforms like Ethereum.
Got it. Needs more activity.
Right. Interoperability is also critical.
Mm-hmm.
Secure, reliable bridges are needed to move assets smoothly and safely between Stellar and other blockchain networks. That's a challenge for the whole industry, really. And while Stellar's focus on compliance is definitely an advantage for attracting institutions, the overall global regulatory landscape for crypto and digital assets is still constantly shifting. That remains a hurdle for everyone operating in this space.
Clear. So Stellar seems to be positioning itself as this regulated, efficient backbone that could potentially unite stablecoins, DeFi, and these RWA tokens all under one compliance-focused umbrella.
That seems to be the strategy outlined in the sources, yes.
Okay, let's quickly summarize the key takeaways from this deep dive for you, the listener. We covered five main points today.
First, Bitcoin. Its correlation with stocks is definitely tighter now than in its early days, particularly when markets are stressed. It's acting more like a high-risk tech investment, less like the proven safe haven, gold.
Second, stablecoins. They're really two different beasts. You have the fiat-based ones like USDC offering liquidity and payment stability. Then you have gold-based ones like PEX Gold offering digital exposure to gold investment, and MiCA treats them differently under regulation.
Third, DeFi. It's genuinely revolutionizing finance with efficient, transparent global services run by smart contracts.
Sure.
But, and it's a big but, significant risks remain, especially smart contract hacks and scalability problems.
Fourth, RWA tokenization. Bringing assets like bonds and real estate onto the blockchain holds promise for liquidity and efficiency. However, it all hinges on that Achilles heel, creating a legally bulletproof structure that truly links the token to the real-world asset.
And fifth, Stellar. It's aiming to tie all these threads together. It leverages its speed, its regulated anchor model, and critically, the institutional trust potentially offered by its new RS-based Soroban smart contract platform, aiming for compliance-friendly integration.
So here's where it gets really interesting, and maybe a final thought for you to consider. The sources seem to point towards a future where these regulated RWA tokens carrying real-world yield merge with the speed and efficiency of DeFi. And this happens on platforms specifically designed for compliance, like Stellar is aiming to be.
Hmm.
If those financial rails, the systems for moving money and value, become incredibly cheap, super fast, globally accessible, and they're backed by tangible regulated assets, how might that fundamentally redefine your own personal approach to saving, investing, maybe even just transacting over the next decade? How does it shift control and access, something to think about?